Yesterday, we marked International Day Against Racial Discrimination, and today we are recognising World Water Day. Supported by the United Nations, this year's theme is called Groundwater, Making the Invisible Visible. It's an extremely relevant topic here in Perth, where 50% of the city's drinking water comes from groundwater. Joining us to talk about Perth's groundwater, where it comes from and what exactly we're drinking in our taps, is Dr. Sarah Burke, a groundwater hydrologist at UWA. Good morning.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you for coming in. Now, just to prime the listener, can you briefly remind us what the water cycle is?
Yes, absolutely. So we live on a rock that has a finite amount of water on it, and most of that water is in the oceans, but that's salty, so we can't really use it for drinking or growing food. Luckily for us, that water evaporates and forms clouds, and then it rains on the land surface. And some of that water will run off and end up in streams and lakes, and other parts of that water will end up infiltrating into the ground, where it's stored between the pore spaces between sand grains or in the fractures in rocks. And it turns out that actually that water that's stored in the ground is the bulk of our fresh liquid water on this planet. So something like 97% of liquid fresh water on Earth is stored in the ground as groundwater.
Amazing. So 50% of our drinking water comes from under the ground. That seems like a lot. Is that a lot compared to other cities?
Well, we're really lucky here in Perth in that we have some 12 kilometres of sediment that we live on, and that sediment is largely filled with water. So we have a giant bucket of water and sand that we're able to utilise to access drinking water. Lots of other places around the world aren't so lucky. They may not have this giant bucket of sand. So we're in a position here in Perth where we can use groundwater, but we do need to manage it wisely. And so a lot of people might be aware that we now supplement our groundwater supplies with water from desalinized water. So we used to use water from dams, but with the drying of our climate, there's less water going into the dams now, and so the decision was made to not rely on those as a water source anymore and to build desalination plants. So now our water is a combination of groundwater and desalinated water.
Okay, so that's very interesting, because that suggests to me that there's been a change in our climate and a change in where we're having to get our water from. How's that affected how we are procuring the groundwater and how we're looking after it?
Well, there's been actually a lot of work done. We have two agencies here in Western Australia that are charged with different aspects of managing and supplying water. There's the Department of Water and Environmental Regulation, which is the management authority, and then the Water Corporation, which are the people who charge you the bill for your water. And both of those agencies have been investing a lot of time and money into making sure that we can be good stewards of our water into the future, even though our climate is drying. So we're doing things like looking for alternative sources like desalinated water. We're also doing a groundwater replenishment program, which involves the reinjection of treated water back into the groundwater system. So yeah, there's a lot of really good work happening here in Perth. We're world leaders, I would say, in water management.
Awesome. So where exactly is this groundwater located, and how much of it do we have?
Well, so anywhere that you're standing, basically, there will be groundwater. Mm-hmm. If you drill into the ground, it's just a matter of how far down you have to drill and what the quality of the water is when you hit it. So if you're out in the goldfields, for example, the groundwater out there is quite salty, and so it's not really used. That's why we invested in a pipe that goes all the way out there. Here in Perth, we're lucky in that we have these very porous, permeable sands that we live on that store lots of good quality fresh water. So the upper sort of 2 or 3 kilometres even is good quality water that you can use, and that's what we do here in Perth.
Awesome. Do we have an idea of how much, I guess, drinkable, accessible water we have underneath Perth?
More than you could possibly ever imagine. I don't, unfortunately, have an exact figure for you, but it is many, 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 many swimming pools or Sydney harbours or whichever water unit you want to use.
So we're not going to go thirsty anytime soon?
No, we're not going to go thirsty. I mean, the Perth Basin, which is this whole bucket of sediment, runs from Bunbury all the way up north to Carnarvon, really. Mm. So we have a massive resource here. And it's about using it wisely and strategically.
Because I do remember back in 2004, I think it was Tim Flannery said that Perth was at risk of becoming a ghost town through climate change.
Right.
Have we dodged that bullet, or are we still in the line of fire? Or, you know, what's happened between 2004 when he said that and 2022?
Well, I'm quite safe and secure in my future here in Perth, and I don't think anyone else needs to be moving anywhere else for fear of water supply. We have really large groundwater resources, and we also have the ocean that we can desalinize. That, of course, takes energy, and so we want to make smart decisions about how we provide that energy to do that. But we're one of the more water-secure places in the world, I would say, not one of the less.
Awesome. Okay, that's really interesting. That, I think, would surprise a lot of listeners to hear. Because we do think of ourselves as such a dry, sunny city in a lot of ways. Now, what does the future of our water use look like, do you think?
Well, certainly the population isn't shrinking. And I think we'll be more efficient and do more water recycling, and we will be continue to work towards having less of our wastewater going out to the ocean. I think that's really where the future lies, is in gaining these efficiencies and closing our local water cycle. But, I mean, we've got to remember that on World Water Day, part of the idea here is that there are 2 billion people around the planet that don't have access to clean, safe drinking water. And it's really our job as humans to be good stewards of this resource, because it's finite. It's all we get. And so, yeah, we really need to take good care of it.
Yeah, and when we talk about those 2 billion, we're not talking necessarily exclusively about people outside of Australia, are we?
No.
There are people here in WA who are struggling
absolutely.
To get drinking water.
Yeah, absolutely. Water supply to remote communities and rural towns in Western Australia is challenged, definitely.
Are there projects or, I guess, ideas or things that you're excited about in how they could be helping getting people in those communities their drinking water?
Oh, well, yeah, it's not an easy fix, unfortunately. Part of the process has to be mapping where the problems are and understanding what the exposures are that people are being exposed to in those communities. And then it's about finding a practical water treatment solution, because really there's, in a lot of those communities, there's no alternative to groundwater. It is groundwater, and there are some things naturally in the groundwater that aren't great for us to be drinking in some of these places. So A, we need to understand the scale of the problem, and part of that is not just the understanding the water quality, but also understanding the health effects, because some of the drinking water guidelines are about acute exposure or are from, you know, subsets of studies that are on certain portions of the population. You know, that age-old story that, like, a lot of health research has been done on white men, for example, right? So we have these guidelines, and they're great, but they're also, you know, they are what they are. They're the information
limited.
We have. There are limits to that. And so there's also more work to be done in understanding what some of the chronic exposure risks are. And if you have two things in your system that are problematic, how does that combine? Does that up your risk than just having the one?
I'm just having flashbacks there. You're talking about, you know, groundwater and its differences from location to location. I'm having flashbacks to being in Durian Bay and finding the tap water there absolutely undrinkable.
Oh, right. Was it salty?
It was like bore water.
Oh,
it had a very strong,
you know, that's
taste.
The thing I learned when I moved here from South Australia, is this idea of bore water as being this kind of smelly, a little bit brown sort of thing. And it's a function of the aquifers that you have here, and that there are these kind of iron and sulfide minerals in there, that's why you get iron staining. But I came from Mount Gambier in South Australia, which is a limestone karstic environment, and the water there, the groundwater, was very clear and blue, and it was our drinking water, and I would, you know, shower in it, and the sinkholes, we'd go swimming in the summer. And so I had this really different idea of groundwater, and then I moved to Perth, and all of a sudden it was this thing that was, oh, it's just bore water. It's just bore water. And I was like, what is going on? But I think we have gotten better in the last 10 or 20 years. I hate to think how long I've been here. At really
community awareness and at people understanding that groundwater is a valuable resource, even though it may stay in the footpath and be a bit smelly when it first comes out of the ground.
That's really funny because, as you know, born and bred West Australian, I had just assumed all water was the same. Now, I need to wrap up our interview, unfortunately, but I wanted to ask you about water because it's a pretty magical element. I mean, it's so intriguing and fascinating and versatile. What's a fun fact about water or groundwater that people might not know?
Well, isn't that 97% of it, liquid fresh water is groundwater? That's a pretty fun fact.
That was very surprising, to be honest, actually. I hadn't heard that before.
I mean, you see streams and rivers all the time and dams, and you think of those as being our main water supply. But the oceans are the bulk of our water. Most of our fresh water is locked up in ice caps and polar regions and glaciers. And then, so the liquid fresh water is really all under the ground. I'm afraid I'm going to have to get back to you with a funner fact than that, Tom.
Well, you've got a year to the next World Water Day, so we'll work on that.
Yeah.
We're out of time, but thank you very much for coming in this morning.
My pleasure, Tom. Thanks so much.
And that was our second guest on today's show, Dr. Sarah Burke from UWA, a specialist in groundwater hydrology.